Hello everyone, this is Ian and I'm here to bring you the July edition of the Angus Talking newspaper. This month your readers are Irene, reading from the paper of the 25th of June, then Muriel, reading from the edition of the 2nd of July, followed by Gwen, with selections from the most recent edition, that of the 9th of July. As an extra at the end, there's an article from the Talking News Federation, giving useful tips for travelling with a visual impairment. So, if you're thinking of going on holiday, this is the place to find out what help is available across the UK, whether you're using planes, trains, buses or boats. But before we get to the news, just a wee announcement about the final arrangements for our get-together at Brecon City Football Club on Tuesday the 18th of August. Enclosed with this recording, you'll find a slip of paper asking you to indicate if you plan to come along and if anyone else will be accompanying you. This is just to give us a rough idea of numbers. We would be very grateful if you would return it, but don't worry if you can't. It doesn't even matter if you change your mind later. If you say you can't attend, then find later that you can come. There's no need to get in touch. Just come along anyway. Same if you plan to come, then you find that you can't. No need to tell us. So there's no need for panic. Just fill in the slip if you can and return it in the yellow pochette. Whatever you do, please do try to come along on the 18th. Remember, it will be very informal. The main business will be tea, biscuits and blethering. We would love to see you, and you and your friends, partners, carers will be very welcome. Remember, this is just a chance to meet us and other listeners, have that blether, and maybe tell us what you think of the Talking newspaper. And let us know if you have any problems receiving the recording or listening to it, or sending the pochette and the USB stick back to us. We really do look forward to seeing you. For now, I hope you've enjoyed the good weather we're having recently, and apparently there's more to come. Right now, enjoy this edition of the Talking Newspaper. For the next 2 months, Stacey will be here introducing recordings, and I will be back in October. But I hope to see you in Brecon before then. Whatever happens, I hope you enjoy the rest of the summer.
Hi, my name is Irene and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, 25th of June, 2026. Warning of pylon damage. Angus residents have told of the irreversible damage to parts of the county if a major electricity infrastructure project goes ahead. Opponents of SSEN Transmission's 400 kV Kintore to Teeling overhead line scheme were able to put their views to Scottish Government reporters at two local sessions of a wider public inquiry into the scheme. Last year, Angus Council lodged a formal objection to the proposal for the line of pylons, which would average around 57 metres high. The towers would run through more than 60 miles of Aberdeenshire and Angus countryside. The project is part of SSEN's £29 billion pathway to 2030 project. The Council's objection was agreed unanimously by all of the area's elected members against the recommendation of the local authority's chief planning officer. The objection triggered the public inquiry into the Section 37 application, which will eventually be decided by Scottish ministers. The Scottish Government Planning and Environmental Appeals Division hosted the inquiry sessions, which were held in Teeling and Brecon. At the Teeling event, reporter Christopher Warren delivered an assurance that all submissions will be taken into account before a report is drawn up and submitted to ministers for a decision. Teeling resident Lorna Campbell told the inquiry that the village is under threat of mass industrialisation. Locals are also resisting plans for a major substation, which is the subject of a separate appeal. Ms Campbell said, "The overhead line does not stand alone. It requires to be anchored at each end. This project has been salami sliced, cut up into chunks, when really it is one project. Tealing is under threat of mass industrialisation, cumulative impact, a domino effect of proposed developments engulfing our village. In Brechin, Leslie Joyner from Memuir told the meeting in City Hall hearing that the fears for the Dunswood small holding on which she and her husband have worked since 1992, an alteration to the planned route prompted by opposition elsewhere on the route, could see three pylons on their land and the loss of native woodland that they planted. People living along the proposed pylon corridor said previously the project has pitched communities against each other. She described treatment by SSEN as at best shoddy and at worst reprehensible. She continued, "I cannot fail to be anxious and distressed. This is life-changing for us. At a stroke, our home will be devalued, diminished, and an unattractive place to live. The rich environment we have lovingly created will be gone." Community councils also put forward their views on the scheme. Tealing Community Council Chairman Steve McSwiggan said his committee had objected formally. He said, "Tealing is well used to dealing with SSE and its associated companies. Up until 3 years ago, we have done so in a positive manner. This will result in irreversible harm. The cumulative effect would intensify an already disproportionate concentration of energy infrastructure in the area." The inquiry hearing sessions are available for viewing on the DPEA YouTube channel. SSEN recently announced a multi-billion pound structure to support delivery of its projects. It includes regional and national civil works, buildings and infrastructure, underground cable design and installation, OHL pole design and build, and OHL tower design and build of lattice tower lines. The company says regional lots will encourage greater participation from local suppliers. Lindsay is a local hero. Kirriemuir community volunteer Lindsay Wilson has been chosen as Angus South's local hero and will attend the official opening of the Scottish Parliament later this month. Lindsay will attend the Holyrood ceremony on Saturday, June 27th, as a special guest, joining other local heroes from across Scotland who have been nominated by their MSPs for their contribution that they make to their communities. The event will mark the start of the Scottish Parliament's seventh session and will be attended by Their Majesties the King and Queen. His Majesty will address MSPs as part of the formal opening before local heroes are welcomed at a reception. Lindsay is well known in Kirriemuir for her work with the Kirriemuir Food Hub, which was established by volunteers during the pandemic to support local food with food security and reduce food waste. The hub has since grown into a major community effort, supported by a large team of volunteers and serving hundreds of local members. Mr. Melville said Lindsay is an absolute stalwart of the community and spends so much of her time getting things done for Kirriemuir. Through the amazing work she and her team of volunteers do, Lindsay has helped provide a vital source of support to so many local people. Her wider efforts to promote cultural activity in the town also speak to someone who is deeply committed to Kirriemuir and its future. Angus is undoubtedly a better place thanks to Lindsay Wilson. I want to thank everyone across Angus who took the time to nominate people. There are so many individuals who work quietly and tirelessly for their communities, and Lindsay is a fantastic example of that spirit. I very much look forward to welcoming Lindsay to the Scottish Parliament for its official opening. Lindsay added, "I am very honoured to receive this nomination from Lloyd. I am lucky to live in such a community-led town where volunteers are in abundance, and the work I do for various organisations brings me great fulfilment." Falklands Memorial Service. The Royal Marines Association held their annual Falklands War Memorial Service recently at the 13 Oaks Memorial Gardens on Barry Budden Military Camp. Organised by the East of Scotland branch, it was well attended by veterans, but also of family members of those who did not return from the South Atlantic conflict. Current serving Royal Marines from 45 Commando Condor also attended, as well as veterans from the Edinburgh and Glasgow branches. They were joined by members of the Royal Marine Volunteer Cadet Corps, who all remembered the 255 British servicemen, including 13 from 45 Commando, who paid the ultimate sacrifice in the 1982 Falklands War. The East of Scotland branch is currently organising a 45th anniversary reunion next year. RNLI to benefit from sale of book collection. A huge collection of books and periodicals owned by well-known Angus Maritime chronicler John Aiken is to go on sale in Montrose today, Thursday. The proceeds from the sale, which will take place at Taylor's Auction Rooms, will benefit the RNLI. The vast collection, which was built up over a lifetime's interest in all matter shipping related, has been donated by Mr. Aiken's family, who hope that the auction will raise a good amount for the lifeboat charity. Mr. Aiken, who died in January, was an author, former Montrose Port Authority board member and their honorary archivist. And for over 30 years, he was also a weekly columnist for his local newspaper, the Montrose Review, and subsequently Angus County Press. Originally from Perth, John's interest in shipping was first piqued when his grandfather took him to visit the city's harbour as a teenager. He then realised that he could see the ship's masts from his classroom in Perth Academy, and his fascination with all things maritime grew from there. The sale will be held at Taylor's online and in person, and Mr. Aiken's family hopes the sale will appeal to a wide audience both in the UK and overseas. Katrina Candy, John's youngest daughter, said, "Our father dedicated most of his life to researching, drawing and writing about ships and shipping, and through that deep interest had established contacts across the UK and overseas. We hope that the sale of his books will be of interest to many shipping enthusiasts and collectors, and that through the auction we can raise vital funds for Montrose RNLI, a charity which our dad was a great supporter of." Scott Murray, RNLI Montrose coxswain, said, "John was well known among our crew and a valued friend of the station. Over the years, he supported the RNLI in numerous ways, including generously sharing his research and writing expertise to author a history of the RNLI in Montrose. We are, and always will be, deeply grateful for the dedication and skills he so kindly gave to the RNLI. We also extend our sincere thanks to his family for their generosity in arranging this auction in the RNLI's name." Distillery appoints new manager. Glencadam Distillery in Brechin has appointed Will Stafford as its new distillery manager, marking the next phase in its growth following its 200th anniversary celebrations. Mr. Stafford brings extensive hands-on distilling experience with over 14 years in the Irish and Scottish spirits industry and more than 9 in distillery operations. Will joins Glencadam from Hinch Distillery, where he served as the inaugural distillery manager and head distiller from 2021 to 2026, having played a central role in designing, building and commissioning the distillery, as well as implementing and managing a major capacity increase. Prior to this, he held senior distilling roles at Copeland Distillery and the Boatyard Distillery, contributing to the development and commissioning of 3 whisky-producing sites in Ireland. His appointment at Gledham comes at a time of continued investment in the brand's future, following the successful launch of its new state-of-the-art visitor centre late last year. Will's career spans every stage of whisky production, from raw material sourcing and distillation through to maturation and site logistics. He said, "I've been fortunate to help design, build and commission several distilleries, but Glencadam's heritage, its commitment to traditional craft and the consistency of its spirit make it truly special. My focus will be on protecting the character and quality that has defined Glencadam for 2 centuries, while supporting the team as the distillery continues to evolve in its next chapter." Founded in 1825, Glencadam is one of Scotland's oldest working distilleries. Insight into Angus's Jacobite role. The role Angus played in the Jacobite cause will be revealed in a new exhibition to be mounted at Montrose Museum later this summer. Tartan and Turmoil, the Angus Jacobite story, will spotlight a world of intrigue, loyalty and rebellion as the county played a pivotal part in the uprisings, particularly Montrose itself. Once branded the most disloyal and disaffected town in Scotland, from Montrose's bustling port, the Jacobites exiled in Europe were supplied with gold, weapons and secret reinforcements. Trace the rebellion's path through Arbroath, Brechin and Forfar, where whispers of resistance stirred the blood of local people, and onward into the Angus Glens, which became the stage for both defiance and eventual defeat. Here, in 1746, after the Battle of Culloden, the last flicker of Angus's Jacobite hopes was finally extinguished. Encounter treasures once owned by Stuart kings, intimate letters penned by Angus rebels, rare weaponry and humble everyday objects that carry the weight of extraordinary stories. Meet not only lords, lairds and ladies, but the butchers, weavers, fishermen, innkeepers and servants whose courage and conviction led them to also fight for the doomed Jacobite cause. Alongside objects from the significant Angus collections, loans will be on display from National Galleries Scotland, National Museums Scotland, National Trust for Scotland, Perth Museum, and many more, making this unique opportunity to learn about Angus and the Jacobites. In association with the event, there will also be a talk by Outlander star Scott Kyle. Emma Gilliland, Angus Alive Museums and Galleries Collections Lead, said, "We are excited to bring Angus's Jacobite story to life for visitors. Everyone has heard about the Jacobites and Bonnie Prince Charlie, but the vital role that Angus played in the risings is little known. Some Jacobite objects from our collection are being exhibited for the very first time, and we will also be showcasing significant objects on loan from leading national institutions, so this is a really special exhibition." Scott Kyle, who played Ross in Outlander, is inviting the public to attend My Outlandish Story, which will be held at Montrose Playhouse on Saturday, August the 8th at 1 p.m. Award-winning actor, producer and author, Scott will share stories from behind the scenes of the international hit show, as well as Kajaki, The Angels Share and Billy and Tim. Scott's life story is as compelling as the roles he is known for, and he will also take his audience on a journey from foster care to international screens, creative stages and global audiences. There will be a chance to chat and share a dram with Scott, courtesy of the Bothy Distillery, and purchase a signed copy of his book, It's Not Where You Start. Angus Alive would like to thank Gin Bothy, Montrose Bag Company and Taylor's Auctions for sponsoring Tartan and Turmoil, and to the Montrose Playhouse, the Bothy Distillery, for supporting my outlandish story. Tartan and Turmoil, the Angus Jacobite story, will be at Montrose Museum from Sunday, July the 18th to Monday, November the 23rd. Weather brings boost for soft fruit growers. While this spring's changeable weather has been a mixed blessing for most, it has had a positive spin-off for the country's soft fruit growers. Raspberries in particular are looking forward to a bumper year and are measuring up to 50% sweeter than usual, according to growers, after a warm spell followed cooler spring temperatures. The raspberries this season are testing at sugar levels of 11 to 12 on the Brix scale, compared with average readings of around 8, the biggest jump growers have seen in years. The Brix scale measures the approximate sugar content of a fruit or fruit juice, with a higher Brix reading generally indicating a sweeter, more flavourful and riper fruit. Growers are attributing the standout quality of this season's raspberries to ideal growing conditions. The prolonged cold spring ensured that the berries were not unnecessarily stressed by the heat and allowed them to flourish and develop healthy leaf canopies and root systems. When the warmer weather finally arrived, it came at the ideal time, ripening the fruit slowly and evenly, turning the berries a deep red and with a sweeter flavour profile, while keeping the sharp tang that characterises raspberries. The latest British raspberry news comes after a record-breaking May bank holiday for British strawberry sales, with over 450 million sold over the May bank holiday week. And while people often associate berry growing with the south of England, the fertile soil, reliable rainfall and longer daylight hours mean Scotland is one of the UK's soft fruit powerhouses, producing millions of strawberries and raspberries each year. Lochie Porter, co-founder at Angus Soft Fruits near Arbroath, said, "The raspberries are something very special this year. I've been growing them for 35 years and I've rarely seen Brix readings like this. The cool spring set the plants up perfectly. Then the sunshine came at exactly the right time. You can taste it straight off the raspberry cane." Nick Marston, British Berry Growers chairperson, said, "The arrival of the British raspberry season is always a welcome moment, and this year, with careful management, our growers have a wonderful crop developing."
Hi, my name is Muriel and I'm reading from Angus County Press, dated the 2nd of July. Angus's police commander has said that both local and out-of-town youths are on the radar of officers cracking down on antisocial behaviour at football grounds and Forfar town centre. The Cross in Forfar was named by a local councillor as a trouble hotspot as Chief Inspector Grace Ewing briefed Angus Scrutiny Committee members recently on the county's latest crime figures. Forfar residents have reported groups of intimidating youngsters gathering around the cross on the town's high street, with widespread reports of items being thrown at vehicles. Local councillor Lynn Devine said antisocial behaviour around the cross in Forfar seems to be escalating now. "We recently had criminal damage to the building. It seems to be escalating from taking out flowers to other things. It's getting to the warmer weather and they will be out and about. I just wonder if you are giving a bit more attention to the cross." Chief Inspector Ewing said, "I am aware there seems to be issues. It just seems to be the place where they meet. The community police team are sighted on it. I will continue to ask that it is given priority as much as it can between call demands. It is about keeping robust action with individuals there to prevent them returning. We have also had conversations with the council around some improvements to the CCTV in the town. Hopefully that will assist, but it continues to be on our radar. Councillors were also told that youth from Dundee had been responsible for trouble around local football grounds last season. Among the incidents was one at Station Park involving masked youngsters. They had not been at the Loons match against East Kilbride. There was trouble outside the ground. The club has taken proactive steps to avoid youth disorder inside the stadium. Chief Inspector Ewing said that the incidents had contributed to a 5.7% increase in the overall year-to-date figures for antisocial behaviour incidents. She said, during this period, we had incidents of disorder at our local clubs in Arbroath, Forfar and Montrose. One of the main factors is youth travelling through from Dundee purely to cause trouble. We also had fans from away teams who engaged in antisocial behaviour in Arbroath. We work closely with our events planning teams and our local clubs to build an intelligence around these fixtures. She pointed out that the games which had seen trouble didn't qualify for routine police cover, as others do. However, support had been provided at the end of the season. She continued, these fixtures were all club category games, meaning they were not policed. It is ultimately the responsibility of the clubs and their security and stewarding staff to ensure they have robust measures in place to deal with any disorder on the ground. Due to the levels of disorder we witnessed spilling out into the local community, we did support the clubs in the final fixtures of the season. Two youths were reported to the Youth Justice Assessor. Brehon resident Christina Black celebrated her 100th birthday recently, surrounded by friends and family. Born in 1926, Christina grew up in a rural community and began her working life in the laundry of a local hospital. She then spent several years caring for elderly residents in St Roston's, a role where she is remembered for her kindness and dedication. She later joined the cleaning staff at the US Navy base in Edsel, where her commitment and high standards earned her formal recognition. A resident of Bearhill Care Home, Christina was joined by family, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A congratulations message from His Majesty the King was delivered by Hugh Campbell Adamson, Deputy Lieutenant of Angus, while Deputy Provost Jill Scott conveyed congratulations on behalf of Angus Council. A Montrose woman has been named North Area Volunteer of the Year by bereavement charity Cruise for her dedication in providing vital counselling support to bereaved people in the community. Sandra Grant has been recognised for her unwavering commitment to supporting adults struggling with grief and loss. Sandra, who is 50, has also been shortlisted for the charity's most prestigious volunteer honour, the Linda Key Award, which is presented annually for exceptional dedication. The award was established in memory of Linda Key, a long-standing Cruise Scotland staff member who died suddenly and unexpectedly in April 2022. Sandra said, I am very grateful for the support and opportunities I have had within Cruise Scotland over the last 10 years. It's an amazing charity with a genuinely lovely and supportive team of staff and volunteers. Winning that award means so much to me personally and reinforces my pride in what I do and the privilege I feel when supporting clients as they take steps along their unique grief journeys. Doreen Miller, North Area Manager, said, we are so grateful to Sandra for the support she has provided to people who have been bereaved in the local community. Sandra is a worthy recipient of our North Area Volunteer of the Year Award and has made a huge contribution to Cruise Scotland. and our both couple have retired after more than 20 years at the helm of local firm Finesse Controls Limited. Directors Fraser and Sheila Dunphy founded the company 26 years ago. Based at Curtin Industrial Estate, it specialises in the design, manufacture and software integration for control systems on process plant and machinery. Fraser, who worked for Timex and Mitchell in Dundee and then Halliburton in Arbroath, has always dreamed of being his own boss. With Sheila, he developed the company from a design firm to a manufacturing site by 2007. The couple now intend to enjoy more time with their grandchildren and will soon travel to East Africa, where they are both involved with charity, the Dalitso Project. Angus South MSP Lloyd Melville recently visited Arbroath-based mental health charity Reach Across to find out more about its work. Based at the Haven on Guthrie Port, Reach Across provides a safe, confidential and welcoming space for people experiencing mental health difficulties. The charity was founded following the loss of a loved one to suicide and has become an important source of support for people in Arbroath and the surrounding area. Mr. Melville's visit highlighted the vital role that community-led charities play in supporting people through difficult periods in their lives. He praised Reach Across as a strong example of local people stepping up to help others, describing the charity as one of the finest examples of a real community-focused charity. He also paid tribute to those involved in delivering the charity's work, saying that support for people facing mental health challenges can make a life-changing difference. Mr. Melville said, Reach Across is one of the finest examples of a real community-focused charity. Their work to help people with mental health challenges changes lives for the better, and that is no small part down to Sandra and her amazing, dedicated volunteers. Folk who need help should pop in, and people who want to make a difference can contribute to making people's lives better by volunteering for this people-powered charity. Lloyd also highlighted the importance of reducing stigma around mental health and making sure people know that support is available locally when they need it. He added mental health challenges can affect anyone and nobody should ever feel ashamed to ask for help. Organisations like Reach Across show the very best of community spirit, and I am grateful for everything they do for people across Arbroath and Angus. Anyone wishing to contact Reach Across can visit them at 36 Guthrie Port or call them on 01241 433651, 01241 433651, or by emailing them on reach-across@hotmail.com, reach-across@hotmail.com. Arbroath farmer Graham McEwen was named the winner of the Produce Excellence Award at the 2026 M&S Select Farm Awards at this year's Royal Highland Show. The award recognises outstanding commitment to quality, reliability and excellence within the produce sector. And Graham was recognised for delivering exceptional Maris Piper potatoes for M&S during a particularly challenging growing season. McEwen Farms is a large mixed farming enterprise spanning approximately 1,600 hectares, as well as producing potatoes for M&S through Manor Fresh Limited. The business also runs significant livestock and arable operations, including beef cattle, sheep and cereal production, employing a team of 10 staff. McEwen Farms played a critical role on maintaining consistent supply for M&S by significantly exceeding contractual commitments for Maris Piper potatoes at key points during the season. Despite widespread growing challenges across the sector, the farm consistently delivered strong crop quality and reliable supply throughout the year. Peter Kennedy, Head of Agriculture and Fisheries at M&S, said the Produce Excellence Award recognises growers who consistently go above and beyond for quality and reliability, and Graham and the team at McEwen Farms has done exactly that. Their ability to deliver outstanding Maris Piper potatoes under difficult growing conditions highlights the resilience, expertise and dedication that exists within British farming. Graham said the reward is a matter of pride for the business. He said that farming always comes with challenges, particularly with the weather, but our focus is always on producing the best quality crop possible and delivering for customers. This recognition is a real credit to the whole team and the hard work they put in throughout the season. Zachariah Lesage from Manor Fresh Limited, who nominated Graham for the award, added, McEwen Farms demonstrated exceptional commitment to supporting the supply chain this season. Their professionalism, consistency and willingness to go the extra mile made a huge difference and makes them thoroughly deserving winners. Brechin driver Barry Russell is the new Scottish champion in the Saloons after victory at Cowdenbeath Racewall on Sunday. The weather helped to ensure a fast track with lots of grip, although the drivers might have preferred it to be a tad cooler. Following on from his Highland Championship success at Crimond on Saturday evening, Barry finally got his hands on the trophy that he had been trying to win since switching to the Formula from the Mini Stocks. Barry was involved in a multi-car battle for the lead in the title race, which also included his sister Gemma. With a few laps remaining, he moved clear, partly due to a move for second place by Gemma, which delayed the other driver significantly. Barry crossed the line to win his first roof colour championship in nearly 4 years and was congratulated by Gemma after celebrating on top of his roof. Unfortunately, Gemma herself spun in the closing stages while battling for the podium. Gemma then finished ninth in both the two all-comers races, while Barry was fifth in the second. Briscaff F2 driver Dennis Midler from Carnoustie was 10th in the Scottish Championship race. However, his gearbox seized just metres after he had crossed the line to bring a premature end to his afternoon. In the Pro Stock Basics was Martin Joy from Monifieth, who came 8th and 7th in his heats, then 10th in the final. Forfar Athletic boss Jim Weir admits to being baffled why a bigger club never signed Mark McCallum. The goalkeeper's testimonial match took place on Saturday as Montrose provided the opposition for a match which ended 1-1. Blair Lyon gave the visitors the lead before Athletic were awarded a penalty, which McCallum scored himself to equalise. Weir told the club's website, "I hope Mark enjoys the events throughout the campaign in his honour and alongside his family treasures all aspects of the year. This is fully deserved recognition of Mark's service to his hometown club. His consistency and level of fitness marked by the number of seasons he's been a never present has been a remarkable feature of his career. His outstanding performances during my earlier spell with the club left me in no doubt Mark was the outstanding part-time goalkeeper in the SPFL. Why higher clubs did not move for Mark at the time remains a mystery to me to this day. Naturally, all at Station Park hope Mark will continue to turn in those inspiring performances for some time yet. Meantime, Athletic had signed left-back Adam Livingston from Dumbarton on a one-year deal. The 28-year-old began his career at Motherwell before spells at Cove Rangers, Clyde and five non-league clubs down south. Montrose has brought the number of new signings up to 5 with the arrival of midfielder Jamie Barjonas and defender Flynn Duffy. Barjonas has made over 200 SPFL appearances with Rangers, Raith Rovers, Partick Thistle, Celtic Hearts, Ayr United, Hamilton Accies and most recently Airdrieonians. The 27-year-old was born in Leeds with a surname originating from a Lithuanian great-grandfather, but grew up north of the border and represented Scotland up to under-19 level. Montrose boss Stuart Petrie said Jamie is a player with real pedigree who has played at a high level and is hungry to kick on again. Having watched him play against us many times and followed his career, he has always been a player I would have loved to play for us. He brings a level of creativity and intelligence that will really enhance our midfield, so we're delighted that he's chosen to be part of what will hopefully be an exciting period ahead for us. Barjonas added, Montrose is a club that's been consistently competitive and plays a style of football I really enjoy, so I'm looking forward to contributing to a big season ahead. Duffy has made over 100 appearances for Peterhead, Stirling Albion, Inverness, Cali Thistle and Airdrieonians, with the 22-year-old comfortable at left back or in more advanced wide roles. Petrie said Flynn is a player we've tracked for a while. He's quick, he's positive and he's hungry to kick on in his career. His versatility down the left side gives us real options and we believe he's got the potential to develop into a top player at this level. We're delighted to bring him in. Duffy added, Montrose is a club known for giving young players a platform to grow, so I'm looking forward to calling Lynx Park home.
And how are you? It's Gwen McIntosh here. After a fine warm day in Carmiley, I'm ready to read for you from Angus County Press, dated 9th of July. Front page news this week is Angus Farm on shortlist. Newton Farm is again among finalists for Regional Thistle Awards. Now for the full story, we need to turn to page 5. Here it tells us, Farm Again on Shortlist by Kevin McRoberts. An agritourism business from Angus is celebrating after being shortlisted once again for the regional finals of Scotland's most prestigious tourism and events awards. Newton Farm Holidays and Tours has been shortlisted for the Innovation Award at the Scottish Thistle Awards Central and East Regional Final. The category, which is sponsored by the Times Scotland, celebrates businesses taking significant steps to improve and invest in the future of 21st century Scottish tourism and events. The family-run farm is also up for the Best Outdoor or Adventure Experience, and awarded one last year at both regional and national level. For over 30 years, the Scottish Thistle Awards have shone a light on the people, places and partnerships that make Scotland an unforgettable destination. Winners for Central and East will be announced at a regional final in September, delivered by Visit Scotland with headline sponsors Abbey, the destination experts. They will then go on to compete against winners from the rest of Scotland at the national final in November. Past winners have credited the awards with boosting their business, raising their profile, increasing inquiries and inspiring their teams, reinforcing their reputation as a valuable platform for success. I had a wee look online at Newton Farm here in Inverarity and discovered there are lots of interesting things to do there. For example, you could take part in their award-winning farm tour, or an alpaca walking experience, a feeding frenzy, Land Rover safari, farm-to-table food experience, miniature donkey experience. There are goats, Highland cows. You could do farm photography and wildlife tour. There are autism-friendly experiences, along with birthday tours, group tours and special events. It sounds really good. Excavation of Aberlemno 3 collar stone underway by Dawn Renton. Archaeological excavation is underway at the site of Aberlemno 3, the Pictish stone from the village of Aberlemno in Angus, which fell during a storm last year. Historic Environment Scotland, HES, will work with their contractor AOC Archaeology to excavate the Aberlemno 3 collar stone, which functioned as a socket for the large slab of stone itself. Through the excavation, archaeologists hope to learn more about the original location of Aberlemno 3. Last year, conservators made the exciting discovery of a small portion of previously unseen carvings on Aberlemno 3, which had been protected over the centuries within the collar stone. Further hidden carvings may well be revealed on the last section, which remains embedded within the collar stone. Once excavated, the collar stone and embedded segment of the Aberlemno 3 will be taken to Edinburgh for analysis and conservation to aid its long-term future and shine further light on the stone's history. Aberlemno 3 is one of four Pictish carved stones from the village of Aberlemno in Angus and dates to the late 1st millennium AD. The iconic carved stone stands at an impressive 2.82 metres tall and is one of the finest Class II Pictish cross slabs in the country. Putsy and crew land in Arbroath by Kevin McRoberts. A unique sailing challenge saw the BBC Children in Need mascot Putsy Bear arrive in Arbroath on Monday. Jonathan and Jackie Bruin, along with a crew of friends and Putsy Bear, are sailing their yacht, Big Bear, on a 2,200 nautical mile voyage around the UK coastline with the aim of raising £70,000 for BBC Children in Need. Setting sail from Hamble near Southampton in May, Putsy Bear and his pals are calling at 35 towns and cities on their 3-month voyage. Along the route, Putsy and the crew are connecting with communities through talks and fundraising activities, building awareness and inspiring support for young people facing adversity, particularly the 1 in 5 children in the UK experiencing mental health challenges. Big Bear skipper Jonathan Bruin is keen to shine a spotlight on the urgent need for support services and safe spaces for young people, with 100% of funds raised going to BBC Children in Need. On arrival in Arbroath, the crew and Pudsey gave a talk and posed for photographs at the Signal Tower Museum. In the last year, BBC Children in Need has supported 363,000 young people. Its primary goal is to improve the lives of young people. Mental health is the focus of BBC Children in Need in 2026.
Some of you might recognise the name of the lady and it featured in the next article. It's Garden Party Invitation for Work with Children by Mark Dowie. A former volunteer who works within Scotland's children's hearings system was a guest at the King's recent garden party in Edinburgh. Leslie Walker and husband Tony were welcomed to the Palace of Holyrood House by the King and Queen after she was nominated in recognition of her services to infants, children and young people. She was among 28 current and former children's hearings volunteers invited to the event. They included current and former panel members who make decisions at children's hearings and panel practice advisors who support quality assurance for hearings. Children's Hearings Scotland, CHS, the public body that recruits, trains and supports panel members, hosted a reception before the garden party for volunteers and their guests. Mrs. Walker, a panel member serving the Tayside and Fife region, said it was such a happy, warm experience and yes, we met the King. He came across to speak to some Ukrainian guests standing next to us and as he left, the King had some good banter with Tony about photographic skills. It was the highlight and a very special day. Though, like other panel members, I don't look for recognition, it was good to have acknowledgement of what it means to be a panel member and the important decisions made by us about the lives of children and young people. Children's hearings are legal meetings set up because there are concerns about the well-being or care of an infant, child or young person. Three panel members sit at each hearing, where decisions are made in the best interests of the child. There are more than 2,100 volunteer panel members who sit on more than 20,000 hearings across Scotland each year, plus around 150 panel practice advisers. Elliot Jackson, National Convener of Children's Hearings Scotland, said, "I am incredibly proud of the volunteers who make decisions in the interests of Scotland's children and uphold their rights within our welfare-based hearing system. It's wonderful to see so many volunteers honoured and for us to come together for this special occasion in recognition of the work they do to bring about positive outcomes for children and families." New acquisition for museum. Montrose Air Station Museum recently took delivery of an impressive new exhibit to add to its extensive collection. The museum is now the proud new owner of a Westland Sea King helicopter, which was unveiled to the public at the museum's recent Armed Forces Day event. The Sea King helicopters were designed by Sikorsky, but this was the first model which was made under license by Westland back in 1969. Set to be a major attraction, the Sea King is currently undergoing essential maintenance work before it goes in permanent display in one of the museum's hangars. Although there's currently no public access, the museum is still open to welcome visitors, with details on its Facebook page. Bell Rock has central role. A series of free talks hosted by National Records of Scotland, NRS, is set to illuminate the history of lighthouses. The talks accompany NRS summer exhibition For the Safety of All, Scotland's Lighthouses. Central to the story is Bell Rock Lighthouse, which stands 12 miles off the coast of Arbroath, with its base submerged to a depth of 16 feet of water at high tide. It is the oldest working sea-washed lighthouse in the world. The first talk will take place on Monday, July 27th, at the Arbroath Signal Tower Museum. The Signal Tower was the lighthouse's shore station. NRS archivists will also explain how to start a family tree on the website Scotland's People, using examples related to the famous lighthouse engineers, the Stevensons. The site is run by NRS and offers access to millions of original birth, marriage, death and census records. There are also lighthouse keeper employment records on the site. The remaining talks will take place at General Register House in Edinburgh. An accompanying exhibition will also feature the letter informing officials of the disappearance of three lightkeepers from the Flannan Isles in 1900, which will be the first time this letter has gone on display. The exhibition will run on weekdays from Monday, August 3rd to Friday, September 25th at General Register House in Edinburgh. There will also be a special free weekend opening on Saturday, September 26th, for Doors Open Day. Free tickets run out quickly and will be added to the NRS page on Eventbrite in the coming weeks. For the Arbroath event, keep checking the Angus Alive website. Sea Dogs Gold Medal Finds New Home by Mark Dowie. A gallantry medal awarded to a St Bernard dog, which became a mascot for the Norwegian Navy during the Second World War, has been presented to Montrose Air Station Museum. Bamsey, the St Bernard, was owned by Captain Erling Hafto, who captained the minesweeper Thorod, which was based in Montrose briefly during the war years. Bamsey lifted the morale of the ship's crew and became well known to the local population in Montrose. In battle, he was known for standing on the boat's front gun tower, and the crew made him a special metal helmet. His acts of heroism included saving a young lieutenant commander who had been attacked by a man wielding a knife by pushing the assailant into the sea and dragging back to shore a sailor who had fallen overboard. He was also known for breaking up fights among his crewmates. After his death in 1944, Bampsey was buried with full military honours on the banks of the South Esk estuary opposite Ferry Den. The grave is cared for by local people, and the Royal Norwegian Navy holds a commemorative ceremony every 10 years. In the early 2000s, a campaign was set up to raise funds to pay for a statue to the heroic canine and to lobby the PDSA for a posthumous presentation of the Dickon Medal, regarded as the animal's Victoria Cross. He was instead given the charity's Gold Medal, the non-military counterpart, and seen as the equivalent of the George Cross. Now that medal has been brought back to Montrose after being presented initially to the family of Captain Haftoe. It has found a new home at Montrose Air Station Museum and was handed over to Major General Martin Smith, Deputy Lieutenant of Angus, by members of the Haftoe family at a packed ceremony during the museum's recent Armed Forces Day event. At the same time, the collection of Montrose Heritage Trust, which supported the statue campaign, and that of local shipping expert and historian, the late John Aiken, were also presented to the museum chairman, Stuart Archibald. The wider event at the museum was well attended and marked the annual opportunity, a chance to show support for members of the armed forces community. Canmore Ladies Enjoy 60th Anniversary Event by Bob Kidd. On a grey Sunday afternoon, 16 teams of lady bowlers brightened up the Forfar Green, gathering to mark the 60th anniversary of the Canmore Club Ladies Section. Seven rinks were set up for a friendly foursome tournament with 60 competitors from all over Perthshire and Angus. After the game, the catering team, committee ladies and gents, put on a grand afternoon spread, followed by speeches and cake cutting. Principal guest was Eleanor Stewart, one of the original founder members from 1966, who spoke of the formation of the section, with only wives of existing members at first admitted to join. Ladies President Linda Carnegie introduced Eleanor and cut the magnificent McLaren's cake with her, followed by Caitlin Wadilove, offering congratulations from District 5 of the Scottish Bowling Federation. The top table featured Caitlin, Helen Torrey, past president, Linda Carnegie, president, and Eleanor with her friend Kath. There's a lovely photograph of everyone, all the competitors at the Canmore Ladies 60th anniversary event, where bowlers from across Perthshire and Angus took part in the competition. Children's Charity Seeking Kilt Walkers by Mark Dowie. Supporters of the Archie Foundation are stepping forward to take part in the Dundee Kilt Walk in August and are calling on others to join them. Taking place on Sunday, August 16th, the Dundee Kilt Walk is a major fundraising event that challenges participants to don a kilt and choose between two walking routes. The 20-mile Mighty Stride starts at West Sands in St Andrews, or there is the option of the 4-mile Wee Wander, which starts at Castle Green in Broughty Ferry, with both finishing at Dundee's Slessor Gardens. Everything raised will help Archie's work supporting babies, children and families across Tayside. Among those taking part is Nicole Watt, paediatric gastroenterology nurse specialist at Ninewells Hospital, and her colleagues who support young patients. Kirsty Davidson's daughter Millie has a gastrostomy tube and is among those who have benefited from a gastronomy book which was funded by Archie. Kirsty said receiving the book from Nicole has really helped Millie. She took it into school one day when she was feeling nervous about her tube getting touched. They read the story out in class and Millie had the opportunity to discuss with her class what happens at Ninewells with her team. She is also taking it to her after-school club to share with her teachers there. Giving Millie a relatable story has not only helped her process her gastronomy tube, but also help others her age understand why it's there. Team Archie Walkers will receive an Archie Foundation t-shirt to wear on the day and will also benefit from dedicated guidance from the team, including expert tips, hints and advice to support their fundraising journey. The Archie Foundation exists to transform experiences and outcomes in healthcare and bereavement for babies, children and families across North Scotland. Now in its 26th year, its vision is that all children in the region will have equal access to world-class healthcare and bereavement support delivered in a child-appropriate environment and manner. More information and to sign up for the Kilt Walk, you can visit https://archie.org/events/kilt-walk-2026/. Angus Gamekeeper is Scotland's Best by Mark Dowie. A young Angus father who left home at 16 for the Balmoral Estate has been crowned Scotland's Best Young Gamekeeper with a record number of endorsements. Jack Brown, who's 20, of Hunt Hill Estate, landed the profession's most prestigious youth prize on Friday 3rd at GWCT Scottish Game Fair with family, friends and fellows in attendance. Judges later confirmed that over 50 people from peers and ex-seniors to community groups nominated the youngster, a record in the near 30-year history of the award. Jack, born in Irvine, was on the hills aiding his head gamekeeper father, Ali, from Heatherhite and left home as a teenager to take up a 2-year traineeship at Delnadamph on the Balmoral Estate. Impressing there, he was offered a beatkeeper job back home at Hunt Hill in Angus, where he is still employed, managing moorland for red grouse and the array of cohabiting upland wildlife. Awarded by the sector's professional body, the Scottish Gamekeepers Association, SGA, the trophy recognises individuals who, by their management and approach, are judged to be an inspiration to future generations and advocates for the sector. Strong Core is Key by Brian Yule. Arbroath striker Andy Winter believes keeping a strong core of players from one season to the next has been key to the club's success. The 24-year-old returns to Gayfield on a permanent deal from Livingston, having previously been on loan last year. A year on from scoring 6 goals in 16 League One appearances, there are still plenty of familiar faces. Winter says that continuity will help them challenge once again in the Championship this term, having finished in the playoffs last term. He told Arbroath FC TV, "When I heard the interest was there, I was obviously very keen to get it done, so it's good to be back. I know the place and I know what I'm getting myself into. Now I'm looking forward to hopefully getting the season started positively. The club has been on the rise since I left. It's not just that one season where they've kicked on, they've been progressing throughout. Hopefully we can now keep that going, as in the changing room there are really, really hungry players. I think that for this division it's actually massive that the core of squad has been together for a number of years. You look at most teams and there's a massive turnover of players every year, but it seems like here they keep a close squad together. You can tell because when the season starts, usually our Arbroath start quite well, and that's important, especially in the Championship where every point is so big. Hopefully we can keep that togetherness there for the start of the season and start really well. Our Arbroath start a new campaign at home to Spartans in the Premier Sports Cup this Saturday." Winter said, "It's a really quick turnaround and you know, teams are still kind of figuring out their squads. It's a good chance to stake your claim for the season and get the momentum rolling."
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This time we're looking at travelling with a visual impairment. What help is available and how to book it? First of all, we looked at air travel.
The most important thing is preparation and making sure that your travel company is aware of your needs. Most airlines require at least 48 hours notice of this to make your travel experience smoother.
Over 75 airports globally, including 17 in the UK and Ireland, are covered by a company called ABM, who provide passenger services for travellers with reduced vision. Personnel are trained to describe the layouts of the surroundings, distances, stairs and obstacles using non-visual language.
They offer guiding and navigation with dedicated staff, providing sight guidance and verbally offering an arm or an elbow, which includes personal guidance and navigation from your arrival drop-off point to the departure gate. Assistance with navigation to the terminal, duty-free and security areas, and pre-boarding onto the aircraft. They can also help with retrieving luggage and navigating to your onward transport at your destination.
If you'd like to take your guide dog, ABM ensure service animals remain with the passenger, are safely processed through security, and have access to airport relief areas.
ABM integrates with programmes like the Hidden Disability Sunflower Lanyard Scheme, helping staff quickly identify and support passengers who have low vision or non-visible sight conditions. Visually impaired assistance with ABM or any other airport special assistance provider is completely free of charge.
ABM stand at the airport can offer help if needed and you haven't already booked. The good news is that UK airports and airlines are legally required to provide special assistance to people with disabilities who travel by air at no extra charge and with no proof of disabilities needed.
Next, we approach the Rail Delivery Group to find out about what assistance is available for visually impaired travellers on the trains. A Rail Delivery Group spokesman said,
"Making the railway more accessible is important so passengers can travel independently, safely and with confidence. We are working to improve the support available for people with accessibility needs, including those who are blind and partially sighted. We want a railway that works for everyone. To help make this happen, we are working with customers, accessibility groups, organisations supporting blind and partially sighted people, and our staff to make improvements across the network."
The statement continued to say that a range of support is already in place to help people travel more easily. Braille station maps to help blind and partially sighted passengers understand station layouts. Disability persons' rail cards give eligible passengers discounted fares on national rail journeys. Good Maps technology, which is available at certain stations, uses a phone app to give step-by-step audio directions inside stations, helping visually impaired passengers find their way independently. The Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Lanyard lets help staff know that a passenger may need extra help, time or support. Audio announcements on trains and in stations with clearer and simpler language introduced recently make information easier to understand.
Passenger Assist and Turn Up and Go offer help with things like boarding, changing trains or getting around the station, whether booked in advance or requested on arrival. Priority seating near the train doors, making it easier for the passenger who needs to sit close to the exit. Tactile paving along the platform edges, providing a textured surface to help passengers identify where the platform edge is safely.
For further information about National Rail Inquiries, Journey Planning and Passenger Assist, you can phone 03457 48 49 50, and that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except Christmas Day. Or you could email customer.relations@nationalrail.co.uk.
Maybe you'd like to take a long distance trip by bus or coach. Most companies offer assistance to visually impaired travellers. And this is what we learned. We started with National Express, which has a dedicated assisted travel team service to support customers wishing to use their long-distance fleet of coaches. VI solo travellers can request assistance by filling in the online form or calling 037 17 81 81 81, and that's from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or by emailing the service team at addl@nationalexpress.com.
Next, we looked at Megabus UK, which offers free travel companions for eligible blind passengers and provides pre-booked boarding and station assistance. If you have visual impairments, you can request alternative journey formats like large print and notify the driver of your specific stop so they can alert you when you arrive. You can email enquiries@megabus.co.uk or you can call 0141 352 4444. And that's during business hours, which are Monday to Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. They ask that you have your booking reference number ready if you have a query about an existing reservation. So what help is there for VI ferry travellers?
Ferry operators provide extensive assistance for blind and visually impaired passengers, including guided boarding, orientation, braille signage, and permission for guide dogs. By law, UK and EU ferry operators must provide this help for free, provided you request it in advance.
Staff can meet you at the terminal, help you navigate through the port, assist you during boarding and disembarkation, and help you locate seating or toilets. Crew members can guide you round the ship to familiarise you with the layout. Some UK operators, such as Whitelink, even use audio-described QR codes in terminals. Ships generally feature braille signage, tactile lift buttons, and frequent audible announcements for safety updates.
Registered guide dogs and assistant dogs travel completely free of charge and have access to passenger decks and facilities. Many operators like CalMac and Whitelink allow your fully sighted carer or companion to travel for free if you need dedicated assistance during your crossing.
You must notify the ferry company of your specific requirements when booking, or at least 48 hours before you travel. This allows staff to flag your reservation, arrange priority parking close to lifts if you're travelling with a vehicle, and ensure the correct number of crew are available to support you. You can check route details or pre-arrange your assistance on the operator websites. If you're using a travel agent, then they can do that for you.
Within the four countries of the UK, there are different ways of accessing help. Let's start with England. Blind and visually impaired travellers are eligible for free bus travel and discount train travel across England under the government-backed schemes.
Blind travellers in Wales receive substantial concessions, including free bus travel, discount on train tickets for you and a companion. These benefits are available if you are registered blind, or severely sight impaired, or partially sighted.
In Northern Ireland, the Registered Blind Smart Pass is a government scheme that grants eligible individuals free travel on public transport services. The scheme is funded by the Northern Ireland Concessionary Fares Scheme and applies to TransLink buses and rail services, as well as cross-border journeys into the Republic of Ireland.
Registered blind people are entitled to free travel on all TransLink bus and rail services, that's Metro, Glider and Ulster Bus, using a Registered Blind Smart Pass. This pass also offers free travel on rural dial-a-lift services and valid point-to-point cross-border travel, whilst partially sighted individuals are entitled to half-fare concessions.
You can pick up an application form in person at a manned TransLink bus or rail station. You can request the application form by phoning 028 90 66 66 30. Or you can request one via email by sending your name and full address to smartpass@translink.co.uk.
In Scotland, the Scottish Thistle Assistance is a free initiative designed to make travelling on public transport in Scotland easier and more comfortable for anyone who needs a little extra help. You can use it on buses, trains, trams, planes and ferries across the country. There is the Thistle app or the Thistle card. Both options let you tell transport staff quickly and discreetly what kind of support you would like. For example, more time to get to your seat or clearer, slower communication.
You can use the Thistle card on the CityLink, which provides an extensive network of express coaches connecting over 200 destinations across Scotland, including services to Northern Ireland and seasonal routes to Blackpool. The seven-city network connects Scotland's major hubs, which are Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Dundee, Inverness, Perth and Stirling. In the Highlands and West Coast, it connects the central belt to rural and tourism destinations in the Highlands and Islands.
The Thistle card or app do not give you free discounted travel. For this, you would need to apply for an NEC, which is a National Entitlement Card, giving free unlimited standard class travel on registered local and long distance buses across Scotland. If your card has an I+1 symbol, a companion can travel with you for free on ScotRail services within Scotland. It also entitles you to free travel on registered local bus services and on standard class ScotRail services within Scotland. It also covers travel to and from Carlisle and Berwick-on-Tweed.
To apply for a Thistle card, email thistlecard@sestran.gov.uk or ring on 01 31 524 5153, or write to Thistle Assistance, SESTRAN 3D Bridge, Victoria Quay, and the postal address is Echo Hotel 6 Quebec, Quebec.
To apply for an NEC card, you can submit an application online via the getyournec.scot portal.
Hopefully you will find some of this information useful. And Jill and I would like to wish you safe and happy journeys wherever you may wander.
Thank you for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. Take care, and until the next time, it's goodbye from us both.
TNF Soundings.